I'd get on my knees and I'd ask God to meet me, you know. And I had a very like real encounter with God where I experienced his presence. It's hard to explain encounters like that.
I'm Adira Polite, and this is Then God Moved. Hello, this is a very special episode. I think I say that just about every time, but it's true every time. You're about to hear my conversation with Nathan Sterling, the bassist of one of my all-time favorite bands, Rivers and Robots, or R&R. Rivers and Robots is an indie Christian band, and as you'll hear, they've been living out their calling in a very unique way. It is worth mentioning that since the time of this recording, the band has decided to go on a hiatus. Of course, this was heartbreaking news for many, but as you'll hear during the interview, the will of God drives everything that these guys do. There's a lot of wisdom in this episode, and I just hope it will bless you as much as it blessed me.
You're in the UK, right?
Manchester, UK. Yeah.
Cool. I don't know if you remember, you sent an email. You responded to one of my emails, and you were like, oh, I'd be willing to write something. And then I was like, it'd be really cool if I could talk to everyone. And then no one responded. And I was praying about it the day before you DM'd me. I was praying about it. And I was like, God, I really want to talk to Rivers and Robots. And he was like, I sent you someone. And I was like, you did. And I was like, please fix it. The next day you messaged me.
That's crazy. Yeah. We kind of went through a bit of a crazy season because we were in Brazil. And then lockdown happened. And we weren't allowed out of our houses for a couple of months. Everything went a bit insane.
Right. So I'm living in Atlanta. That's where I am. I can tell you a little bit about the project. Essentially, the goal is just to share just stories of God's movement with non-believers. Because like I grew up in the church, everyone would always say, God is good. And I was like, okay, like how? Like you're just saying God's good. And like, I don't really know what that means. Like, I guess I believe, but like I didn't believe. And since coming to faith, it's like, I've had so many encounters with the Lord that are just mind-blowing. And so many non-believers never get a chance to hear that.
That's so good. Yeah, I love that.
Like, there's this one story of this guy who was in the Klan. He was a white supremacist. Cool. And he had this just miraculous encounter with Jesus. And it changed his whole life. Like, now he's, like, the only white member at an all-black church. He was baptized by a black man. And
How beautiful is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. It's crazy. I've not got any crazy testimony like that, but
yeah. I mean, faith itself is a miracle, you know.
Yeah.
So, can you tell me a little bit about yourself? Where did you grow up, and what was your journey towards initial faith?
Sure. Yeah, I think my story is probably quite similar to a lot of people growing up in the church. So, my dad was an elder in a church, and my mum used to lead worship at our church as well. And they also used to travel around and preach at different places all over the UK. So I grew up very much surrounded by Christianity, surrounded by stories about Jesus, hearing people's testimonies. My dad was actually a hippie who became a Christian. So he had a really dramatic encounter with God where he was taking drugs and all of this kind of stuff and was queuing up to go and see a guru in Manchester. And this guy came up to him in the street and told him about Jesus. And he ended up going to a Bible study instead. And so my dad's life completely was radically turned around when he encountered Jesus. So I would grow up hearing all of his stories, all these testimonies, hearing my dad preach. And I believed it, kind of like, I call it like a childhood faith.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best way I can describe it is it was kind of similar to the relationship I had with my granddad. So my granddad passed away when I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew my granddad. But to me, my granddad was the guy who gave me a pound coin and a mint would like ruffle my hair. And that was basically about as deep as I went with my granddad. And then he passed away. So I never knew my granddad as an adult. So I knew him, but I didn't really know him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think my relationship with God was a little bit like that. I think a lot of people growing up in church will have made like commitments at a young age or that kind of thing. But then I hit about 16 years old and I said to to the Lord, if I'm going to serve you with my life, like, I need to actually encounter you and know you for myself. Because, you know, it's great hearing information or like growing up in a Christian environment, but at some point it's got to be real, a real experience for yourself. Otherwise, why would you give your life, you know? So around that time, I would go into my bedroom. I found like a couple of hours every day where I could get alone with God when there was no one else in the house. And I got on my knees and I would ask God to meet me in a real way that would set me up for a life of serving him, you know? So I'd go through this process. I'd put on worship cassettes, they were. I mean, we did have CD players, but, you know, I went old school and got cassettes. And I would, I'd get on my knees and I'd ask God to meet me, you know, and I had a very like real encounter with God where I experienced his presence. It's hard to explain encounters like that because some people think it's really weird, but I encountered the presence of God. And that was what I needed, you know? And then I began sort of, this was about a 3-month process that I went through with the Lord on this one. And I started praying honest prayers to him. Like, I read the Bible and it's not coming alive to me. Like, do you make the Bible something that I want to read? And then as I began to read through the Bible, the words would come out of the page kind of thing. And I was starting to see real life. Like when I was reading the Bible, it wasn't just a boring dead book. It became very real, you know? And then I would pray prayers like, I've got tons of friends that don't know you, Jesus. And like where they end up in eternity doesn't bother me. Give me a heart for the lost. And then the Lord began to give me like this passion in my heart to start to tell people about Jesus. And this real like evangelistic passion started coming up. I started to find youth group at my church very frustrating because it wasn't really doing what I wanted it to do. When the only way I can describe it is like if you start getting on fire for God, it's going to be quite a frustrating place because you begin to look at your other friends at church or whatever and you're like, why aren't we doing this stuff? And people don't always understand that. But yeah, from there then I got into like doing short-term missions trips and like just different things where I could find an outlet, and the passion grew and grew from there really. But I'd say 16 was when I really got real with Jesus.
Yeah, that is, it's always tough when you recognize what culture is passing for faith. And I see that a lot in America where it's like, it's Christian culture and it's like a rich culture, but it's not grounded in love for Christ. And sometimes it's even grounded in love for community, but it's not grounded in love for Christ.
I think we all kind of feel that. I can't fully speak for America. I mean, I've only been a couple of times. I'm from the UK. But from what I can see in America, people are done with the fake Christian thing. And it's like, well, what are you going to do with that? Are you going to throw out everything? Or are you going to dive in deep and find reality? You know, there's more to this Christian thing than just cultural Christianity. There's an exciting, vibrant faith in there if you're willing to find it.
Right. That requires us, like American Christians who really know Christ, to like show it. But it's so hard and like intimidating, but it's happening. It is happening. So,
it is, yeah.
So do you feel that God called you to music? Would you call it your ministry?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. I think, I don't really know what I'm making of that. I think God uses individuals. It doesn't really matter what you're doing so much. It's more about the relationship that you're cultivating with God, you know? You could be a lawyer, you could be a musician, you could be mum at home, you could be anything. But when you've got a personal relationship with Jesus, I think the Bible says, well, Jesus talked about abiding in the vine. If you abide in me, you'll bear much fruit. And I think really the job of us as Christians, followers of Jesus, is like cultivating this relationship with the Lord where we abide with him. And then whatever we do, whether we're a musician or whether we're, whatever we're doing, the life of Christ should flow out into that area. So if, like for me, I'm a musician, so I play music, I travel around and I sing about Jesus, but you know, it's not just what we do as a ministry, it's who we are. I don't know.
I mean, as a listener, it's like very obvious that you guys are where you're supposed to be. Like his hand is just in the music. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. The question I would have for myself, though, would be, like, if the band thing finishes in a few years, like, is that my calling over?
Right,
And I think really, like, it doesn't really stop. Like, wherever you find yourself, like, if you're carrying the Holy Spirit and you're abiding in Jesus, like, you'll bear much fruit, whether that's as a musician or as a person working in a grocery store or whatever. Like, yeah, it's more that connection to Him that's the main thing rather than the calling that we're chasing after, you know?
Amen. That's true. How would you describe that fruit? Like, what is that fruit for you in this season? What have you seen?
Okay. Rivers and Robots. And we released an album called All Things New. That was that was probably our first breakthrough album. We put it on the internet. We were just four kids from Salford. I think we were all in our early 20s. Yeah. And we released this album and it blew up. It was like 25,000 downloads within a weekend. And then suddenly we were getting invites from everywhere. Record labels and kind of scary music execs started phoning us up and showing up at our shows and different things like that. And we had a decision to make of, like, do we want to pursue this music career or do we want to do ministry stuff? And we had a lot of opportunities to join big Christian record labels and play in churches and Christian festivals. And as we prayed and just sort of journeyed with that, we just felt like that's not really what we're about. Like, so we initially turned down all of the record deals and we set up a ministry ourselves called Set Sail, which is a creative arts missions organization, basically. So what we decided to do is to take all of the money from Rivers and Robots and give that to ministry. And we decided we would live as missionaries instead, raising our own personal support. So we can't make any money off Rivers and Robots, and we're quite happy about that. So that meant that we could then go into prisons in the Philippines and work with children's homes, and we could go out to Japan, where there's not many Christians out there, and we can tell those people about Jesus. So we basically just positioned our whole band and ethos around ministry and around sharing the gospel. So probably over the last 5 years or so, we've seen over 1,000 people come to know Jesus that we've met face to face. We've seen a lot of testimonies coming through of people getting set free from depression, from anxiety. Seen like people who didn't know Jesus or had walked away from the church getting back on fire for Jesus again. So I'd say those are the kind of things that I think I would say is fruit, really. So it's quite encouraging.
Wow, God bless you guys for not just taking the easy road. I feel like so many people would say, okay, this is our big break and run with it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, isn't it? We think that success is selling CDs and growing our Instagram followers. But success, I think, is really being obedient to what God's asking you to do. Success is getting to the end of life and God saying, well done, my good and faithful servant, you know. I don't know.
No, it's so true. It's true. I feel like that's something we have to remind ourselves of each day, because with this project, like, I have so many friends, both believers and non-believers, who are always like, oh, you should do this, you should do that, and they have like all these ideas, very well-meaning, and like some of them are fantastic ideas, but it's like, to even to move forward without having confirmation from God, that's terrifying to me. Like, I don't want this to blow up and I just lose my soul. I mean, scripture tells us, like, I think that's super wise, and like, He's still blessed you guys and sustained you guys to continue to do the work He's given you.
It's funny you say that. I love that passage where Moses said, we won't leave this place unless Your presence comes with us. Towards the end of 2018, I felt like I was just burning out. Like, we were doing a heck of a lot of tours and traveling around a lot and doing a lot of giving out, and I felt completely exhausted. And I actually went for a coffee with a friend, and he was just saying, Nathan, I think you need to kind of look after yourself a bit. You're pushing yourself a bit too hard here, you know. I went away and I was just praying and seeking the Lord about it. And I got this picture of like the tide, you know, like the ocean. And when the tide goes out, like, you can't see any of the water anywhere. Like, I don't know if you've been to the beach when the tide's out, like, just have like seaweed just lying around, like, it's absolutely gross. And like, there's no water, and like, the sand's all dodgy and squishy, you know. And I felt like the Lord was challenging me, really. A Song of Songs says, come away with me, my beloved.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like what's important is that we are where God is. So we don't want to go somewhere where his presence isn't, you know. So we can be sat doing ministry, but like, the tide is all the way out there, you know. So we could be like fish, like just flopping about on the shore, saying, hey, look at my ministry. It's really great. Without the Lord, like, it's going to kill you, you know. So I felt a challenge from him, really, to go again to the secret place, you know, to the hidden place with him. Like, there's a prayer group in Manchester where it's maybe like six of us and we meet together. No one sees that. And it's like, well, that's a hidden place where I can go that's not in a public setting, and I can lead worship there, and I can sit at the back and I can pray. I could spend time in his presence on my own, you know. And I kind of feel that challenge a lot with COVID as well. With, it's like a season where all the public ministry has ceased, but it's a great opportunity and an invitation for us to go away with God in the secret place, like, find out, what are you preparing, God? What are you calling me into in this next season, you know? And I think it's the people who will go away with him in the secret place that will come riding in with him in the public place when the time's right.
Have there been any challenges that you guys have experienced, maybe even specifically during COVID, as Christian artists? Are there special temptations for you as Christian artists?
Oh, gosh. I think one of the things is dealing with expectations that people put on you. You're doing your thing, and then someone says, oh, I think you need to do this in your performance, or maybe you can improve in this area or that area. And I remember we were starting out, and there's a couple of well-meaning, like, older Christian musicians who would try and encourage us. There's a level of that that's quite good and healthy. But if you're not careful, you can end up losing your identity, where it becomes like, oh, I think I need to perform a bit better to make this person like me. Or for me, as a sort of Christian musician, I think that's probably been one of the harder ones. Like, you can slip into performance mentality quite easily.
Yeah.
And really, I think the important thing is to learn what it is to be yourself and to value what God's given you to say and what God's given you to do. I think that's probably been one of the biggest learning points. Is I don't need to try and impress. I just share my experience. I share what the Lord's done in my life, and I allow them to receive that, you know. I was thinking a lot about that, you know, where David is going out to fight Goliath, and Saul is a well-meaning king, you know. He starts putting all this, like, armor on him. Oh, you should do it this way. This is the way I did it, you know. But David was confident in who he was and what God had put in him and what God was going to do. That he took off all the things that people were trying to make him do, and he ran out with his five stones and swung this thing around his head and killed Goliath, you know. I think as artists, as a Christian musician, that's quite a challenge, is overcoming all of that baggage that people around you will say, oh, you should do it this way and do it this way.
Yeah.
And say, well, who's God made me to be, and, like, how do I share my own experience, you know? Yeah, I don't know.
That's really good. I feel like that kind of ties to what you were saying about the secret place. And I feel like a lot of it comes down to, like, believing what he has told you when it's the two of you.
Yeah.
And not, like, letting other people talk you out of what he's told you to do.
Yeah. That's good. I think I should definitely qualify that, though, as well. And just say, in terms of, like, accountability with older, wiser leaders.
Right.
I think that's wisdom. If there's, like, someone that really cares about you, you know, maybe it's a pastor or a parent or something, and they're offering advice, definitely listen to that. But if it's someone putting pressure on your shoulders and telling you you should do something a different way, just be a bit careful with that. Like, you know, because God's given you a unique voice, and, like, you should value that.
Yeah. So I did a little bit of stalking, as any good interviewer does, and I found a post you wrote before your 30th birthday. And, like, in part, you look really scared.
No, it's still good. I'm trying to remember what I put.
In part, you were looking to the future. You were like dreaming about things you want to do. But you also discussed your past and you were talking about heartbreak and loneliness. And you said that in a way, it just felt like it was all too much. And I'm wondering, you don't have to share if you're uncomfortable, but what were some of those moments and how did God carry you through those?
Yeah, sure. I'm just trying to think about how to say this. The thing about like life is life just kind of happens, doesn't it? Like, and you can't control it. Like, and I think we're all pretty aware that like, you know, following Jesus doesn't mean that your whole life's going to be completely perfect the whole time. Right. And you just kind of like float away on a cloud to heaven after living a great life, you know? So yeah, I've been through some pretty rough stuff. I think for me, a lot of it was down to relationships, you know, like boyfriend-girlfriend relationships and different things like that. So I went through a very long season of singleness, probably about 10 years, which was really, really tough. Don't think anyone wants to be single for 10 years. And then I finally met like this person that I thought was going to solve all the issues and all that. It kind of sounds like your typical story, you know, but it was like I was in a 3-year relationship with someone. It was quite serious. But during all of that season of me walking through my personal life like that, I'm in a public place playing music, preaching the gospel, doing everything that you all see. But in my personal life, my relationship's like disintegrating. And I've been through a lot of that. So you have like highs and you have lows, and like life is always going to happen. But I think there's something about surrender is an interesting thing. I don't quite know where I'm going, mate.
You're good.
Yeah. I think the thing about surrender, so I've never talked about this in public before. So through all like your journey and all of that kind of stuff, it's like learning how to surrender to God, you know? And I guess I was quite good at surrendering in terms of like quit my job, go and do this thing that I really enjoy, you know, Rivers and Robots, like surrender, you know, like a comfortable salary and all of that. But I think in life, I don't know if maybe it's just me, but like there's little compartments of my life that maybe I'm not learning how to surrender in, or maybe I'm a bit more nervous about surrendering.
Right.
And I think the relationship thing was definitely one of those things that I was like, you can have everything else, God, but I'm going to try and keep this and I don't trust you with this bit. And I think, yeah, just over the last probably about two years or so, I've just been really journeying with God and learning about how to let go. But yeah, the thing about surrender, when you can finally surrender, God can take you places that you can't go on your own. You know, I kind of said surrender. One of the things I wrote was I used to think surrender was like grabbing a surfboard and riding a wave and just letting it take you wherever God goes. And like that kind of surrender is really fun. That kind of surrender is like quit your job, go do a band, like travel around the world. I love that kind of surrender. It's fun, right? But then there's another kind of surrender where the board flips up and you're like underneath the water and you have no idea what's going to happen anymore, and you're now like flailing around. Like you've been in this nice relationship, it's all blown up, and now you're like under the water, God, what's happening? And you are now fully surrendered to wherever that wave takes you, you know.
Right.
But the thing about God is God's not scary, you know. God's not someone that we can't trust, you know. And he's got great plans for us, and he pushes us even through the things we don't understand to the places where we need to be. When you get to that point of trust, then you can finally be like, hey, you know, this relationship thing, I can lay it at God's feet, you know, he's got it.
Right.
And all those kind of insecurities and things that come with it, you can lay that at God's feet and he can heal you of that.
Yeah.
To the point where you can actually be happy and breathe. Yeah. And I think probably like last year, I think I finally got to a point where I was like, it's going to work out.
Yeah. Praise God. I feel like each time you have one of those experiences, it just builds your faith for the next one. So yeah. It's like you can kind of take you know, it's like height to height. Like you experience that, he proves himself to you essentially.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing of like, we're trying to find fulfillment in a lot of different things.
Yeah.
When actually God can actually be our fulfillment and give us what we need. And we don't need to be holding on to this stuff that's maybe not right for us and then like being upset when it doesn't work out. I don't know if any of that stuff even makes any sense to you.
Or yes, it does. It really does. It's, and it's so relatable, especially to the youth, you know, Gen Z.
I'm just rambling on, yeah.
No, it makes total sense. So when you think about music, what do you think music's role is within the Great Commission?
Oh, cool. So I always say to people that I kind of view music as a language.
Mm.
So like you have French or Spanish or Japanese or whatever. If you're a missionary and you go to another country, you're going to learn that language. You're going to speak that language. And then you're going to communicate the truth of the gospel. And I kind of view music kind of in the same way. It's a language. So like you can have Christian music. You can have we played a show once with a full-on communist in Portugal, which is interesting. I've never done that before.
Wow.
He's talking about whatever he wants to talk about. Then we're like, great, right, let's talk about Jesus, you know.
Yeah.
Music's kind of like a language. It's a connection point. It's something that we can all speak and understand. And it's an opportunity for us to share truths of the gospel, things about Jesus. I think with every language, there's rules attached to language as well. I think creativity, I don't fully like it when people say music is a tool to preach the gospel. I like to view it as like the actual creativity of music is really important and we should value that. And through that, we share the gospel. It's not like a means to an end. Like,
yeah.
It's the whole thing, you know. I don't know if that makes sense.
So you would say it's not like you take music and the gospel, you funnel through that? You would say it's...
Yeah, I don't like the idea of... How do I word this? sometimes, like, what we do is, like, we pull people into an event like that. We say, oh, it's going to be really cool. And then the music's terrible. Mm. And then we preach the gospel. People don't feel like they've got what they came for, you know. I feel like you can be a very creative person and really value creativity and put your all into it, and you can talk about Jesus as well. And I think when you value the creativity, it's like you're respecting the language of music. Like when a musician walks into the room, or you're at a club venue, and we do a lot of shows not just in churches but out in the music venues around the UK. If you can respect like the art of music, people will respect what you've got to say as well. It's like, I think there is something about in this world, like we have a lot of silos at the moment. It's like echo chambers, like you have on Facebook and different things like that, where we just are all saying the same things that we all agree with. And Christian music can be like that sometimes. You can have these Christian music bubbles where we all say the right things and we're all patting each other on the back. But I'd encourage people to get outside of that comfortable place, connect with people in your city who are in the music venues, play music, connect with people, share about Jesus, pray for people after shows, all of that kind of stuff. I don't think we have to conform to we're just going to do Christian music in a church, which is nothing wrong with that. But it's like, how do we open that up a bit more? What does it look like to do Christian music outside the four walls of the church? Like, how do we connect with people that don't share our worldview? In the Bible, there's a story of this woman who smashed an alabaster jar on the feet of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing about that story to me is that she did it in a Pharisee's house. The Pharisee wasn't happy about this woman coming into the house and smashing an alabaster jar on Jesus' feet. And they all said, who is this woman? This is like that really sinful woman who's done all of this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she smashed this alabaster jar on the feet of Jesus in a place where she wasn't welcome. And I love that as a picture of like, what would it look like for us as Christians to go into the world and worship Jesus in a space that's maybe a bit more hostile, and like we're not quite sure what the reactions are going to be like, but we're gonna take this offering of worship, and we're gonna place it at the feet of Jesus, and allow the fragrance of that perfume to fill the room. And that's visibility, basically. You can stay in the safety of your own church and worship Jesus, and no one will react, and no one will have a problem. Or you can go into like the Pharisee's house. Break guard you in front of everybody and allow the reactions to be what the reactions are, but it's visible, you know. And I think that's a challenge for us as Christians, is like, how do we get outside the four walls of the church and make this gospel visible, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a huge part of it is quality. And I feel like when you are thinking of it as we are creatives and like we are making something with that creativity, we are allowing God to work through us through that creativity and showcase him. And you're not doing it within the four walls and you're not doing it as a means to an end. I feel like that kind of invites you to make it good. Like not just make it for people who are going to want it anyway, but for people who might say, well, this is Christian, but it's really good. So maybe I'll listen to it.
Yeah.
This is Christian. But it's really good. So maybe I'll watch it. Gives it more, I feel, seed planting power when it's good and it's undeniably good. And some people are invited in by that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a musician, so I can be a musician. I can play and be creative and do everything that's in my heart to do. And I'm a Christian, so I can talk about Jesus.
Right.
And those, when those two things work together, it's actually really powerful. Yeah. Cool. And when those things happen together in a visible place where people can see it too. I don't know if it's that story, but there's another story connected. This woman smashes an expensive jar of perfume, and I think one of the disciples says that was worth a year's wages, you know.
Yeah.
And I always say, well, how much is a year's wages in the UK? I'm not quite sure. I think it's about 20 something thousand pounds. Mm-hmm. I've never earned that much money. But that's about the price of a studio album. Mm. So it's like, are you willing to take your studio album that you've spent a lot of money on, 20 something thousand pounds, and just smash it at the feet of Jesus? I love that. And like, actually putting some costs behind what you're doing and actually valuing the creativity and then laying it at the feet of Jesus as well. Like not offering a cheap kind of thing that you've just rustled up, but you've actually worked really hard on this. I think there's some real value in that. Yeah.
Has there been like a humbling aspect to the, I guess, missionary lifestyle that you guys have chosen to live? Like you're asking people for money, right? Was that a struggle?
Yeah. I think I remember when I did it, the first people I talked to was my pastors, and they gave me their support and blessing. And then I spoke to family members. I remember I reached out to a really close friend of mine and I said, hey man, I'm thinking of doing this thing. We're not going to take any of the money to do it. We want to spend all that on mission stuff. Would you be willing to support what I'm doing and pray for me? And maybe you could give a monthly donation. I remember his reaction was just like, oh, well, I'd love to quit my job and do music and travel around the world. And it was so like, I was like, goodness me. Like, and the thing is like, that is incredibly humbling. But people won't always understand your motivations, you know, and like, I don't know what you do with that. You just kind of leave that to that person, I guess. You don't always need to be understood. But I think it was quite humbling, to be honest.
People have come and gone just a little bit in Rivers and Robots, but you've stayed the whole time. Why?
Yeah, I think for us, it was I know we talked about the call-in and the not call-in thing and all that.
Right.
I'm going to go back on my words a little bit and say that there is actually a bit of a call-in thing. That like in the Bible, it says, without a vision, the people perish. You know, you've got to have some kind of a vision, something that you're aiming at. You know, and for us, it was kind of twofold. It was to make Jesus known through creative worship. So it was like the things that we make, we want to share the gospel. We want to introduce people to Jesus. And then the other side was to inspire and equip other artists to use their gifts to make Jesus known. So I think for us, like we kind of have always had these kind of like strong vision things that we're chasing after. And I think when you've got like a strong kind of idea of what you're chasing after, that can be quite sustainable. And I also think the way that you do ministry as well. So are you rooted and grounded in church? Like, is your personal walk with Jesus doing good? Like all of those kind of things that you can't see, when those things are nailed down, like that's like sustainability, and that'll keep you going.
That's awesome. I'm glad you guys are doing what you're doing, because it is good. It is so good. I first discovered Rivers and Robots in my hotel before taking this flight to South Africa.
Wow.
And I was like, wait. And it was Who Is Like Our God was the first song I heard. And I was like,
that's amazing.
There's this one mountain called Table Mountain. They call it the tablecloth because the clouds like fall down the mountain, like gradually, like all day long. And it's just everything about the geography makes you look up. And so I was there and it was just like, I was listening to this music on the bus and stuff. And it was just, oh, it was amazing. I always say, hopefully one day I will have made some screenplays and like, hopefully there will be films of some of these testimonies. And Rivers and Robots has to be on the soundtrack. Like, I'm like, this is testimony movie music. It would be so incredible.
Wow. That's incredible.
It was awesome. So thank you guys for what you do. And thank you so much for being here. This is amazing. This is truly like a dream come true interview. I'm so excited to share this.
Okay, I'm hoping I'm saying the right things.
You are. You're good. You're good at prompts. If you're not familiar with Rivers and Robots, I highly encourage you to do yourself a favor and check them out. If you enjoyed this episode, please do us a favor and leave us a rating and a review. I'll talk to y'all next week. In the meantime, feel free to send any questions or comments to thengodmoved@gmail.com.